want to go back 1 year. It's May 2024 again. What's the biggest thing in AI that turns out to be not that big of a deal? Kush Varshney is an IBM fellow on AI governance. Kush, welcome back to the show. What do you think?
Kolmogor of Arnold Networks.
Got it. That's a good one. Shobhit Varshney, head of data and AI for the Americas. Shobhit?
The cost of AI. I think the intelligence per dollar has plummeted significantly.
Absolutely. And last but not least is Chris Hay, distinguished engineer and CTO of Customer Transformation. Chris, what do you think?
Those stupid pen things we got all excited about last year.
All that and more on today's Mixture of Experts. I'm Tim Huang, and welcome to Mixture of Experts. Each week, MOE brings together the smartest and I think the most good-looking crew in all of podcasting to discuss and debate the biggest news in artificial intelligence. And this is a big episode. Today, we are officially celebrating our one-year anniversary of MOE, and we've brought together the original crew from MOE Episode 1 to join us, all-star crew. We're going to do a look back, cover a call to action from JP Morgan, a new wave of action in the Chinese AI market. But first, I really wanted to cover all the latest from LlamaCon. So I believe this was the first event, officially, the first LlamaCon that Meta has run, focusing on its work in the open source space and around the Llama class of models. I think a lot of announcements to cover here, but I think, Shobhit, the first one that I was really intrigued to get your take on was they announced this thing called Llama API. It was a developer platform that, quote, will bring together the best of closed source with open source flexibility. And so for our listeners who might be less familiar with this, like, what have they done and why is it kind of a big deal? At least in my opinion, I think it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so today, in the current state, if an enterprise needs to go play around with Llama models, you go to one of your hyperscaler partners and say you're going to use their version of the studio, their way of fine-tuning it, and whatever the hyperscalers are producing. And then once you're done with that model, it's difficult to move it around and whatnot, right? So in this particular case, Meta is coming out and saying, we want to be as developer-friendly as possible. We'll give you a central place with all the playgrounds, the fine-tuning capabilities, also evaluations, and so on and so forth. So as you're fine-tuning the model, you can test it out. All of that will be done centrally, and they will host the API for Llama as well. You can obviously still get it everywhere else that you get your LLMs from, but now they're developing a whole set of stack. So they're moving beyond just providing the model to be providing the whole ecosystem. They have done enough work in the space with Llama Stack and a few other things in the past, but this was their coming out party, saying that we are going to be as developer-friendly as possible. Come work with us. We'll help you fine-tune it. Once you're done with that model, you can take it anywhere. Obviously, there are a lot of things around privacy where they will not train the model on the data that you're providing them and so on and so forth, but the inference speed is amazing with their partnerships with Cerberus and Grok and others. So overall, they want to be the hub where people come and experiment with Llama models versus Llama models being one of the 200 models available on Microsoft or AWS or Google.
Yeah, for sure. And Chris, maybe to bring you into this conversation, I was having a debate with a friend about this announcement. We were kind of talking about like whether or not this is almost like a position of strength for Meta or almost like a position of weakness for Meta. There's one point of view, which is, hey, we release these open source models and everybody will build all the tooling around it, essentially. That's like kind of what we do is we do the model and then like everybody else builds the ecosystem. So that's kind of like the bear case. And my friend was like, well, the bull case is actually that like they recognize that like they're actually investing more in this space now. And it's like really they recognize that there's such a big opportunity that they have to actively build this stack. I'm curious if you kind of have any feelings about that or how you kind of size up these moves.
I think it's a really interesting move. I mean, as you kind of say, I think it's a great move. I think having a sort of standardized stack where you can bring your models, you can fine tune them. And I think fine tuning is going to become a bigger thing in the future. So, you know, because you're going to want your own personalized model, you're going to want something with domain knowledge, and therefore bringing that into a consistent place, I think is a good thing. And then if you think about where Meta wants to go in the future, they want AI to power all your avatars, assistants, et cetera, on their platforms and have agents on there. Then I think making it easier to have a playground for developers and individuals to tune models based on Llama Stack, I think is a sensible thing. I do think though that when I really look at this though, all the APIs are OpenAI compatible APIs, and nearly every single service provider is moving towards OpenAI compatible APIs anyway. So there is still a part of me that goes, well, can I do that somewhere else? And sure, with the fine-tuning part specifically, that is hard, right? Because, you know, getting your models out of some of those existing stacks and taking them elsewhere is a more difficult thing. So I think that is a differential play in my mind.
Totally. Yeah, it's getting more complicated kind of seeing them navigate this. Kush, another part of the announcement that I wanted you to comment on was that they also announced all of these kind of security and protection models. So Llama Guard 4, Llama Firewall, Llama Prompt Guard 2, it kind of feels like a little bit of like almost like the protection space around AI is starting to get like a lot more complicated than it used to be, where the old thing was like, oh, well, we just have a model that tells you if like the outputs are toxic. Now it feels like they've got like at every layer of the stack, there's like a model you can use for security and safety. Curious about how you kind of like read these trends. Like, where is this going? Is it just going to become like a more and more complicated, you know, ecosystem of safety models? Just curious about your hot take on that.
As you said, I mean, they have this new Llama Guard 4. It's a 12 billion parameter model. It's multimodal, so it has the vision and the text in there. The prompt guard they made really tiny, I think 22 million parameters and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, they're making progress, certainly. The headlines are good. We haven't had a chance to evaluate and see what the performance is yet. And actually, just a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, there was a new benchmark that came out called Guard Bench. So this Guard Bench actually goes and tests a lot of different guardrail models and stuff. Just a side note, the Granite Guardian model that I've talked about in the past is at the top of that leaderboard, but we should see. I mean, how's Llama Guard for doing there? Because if they've really made good progress, that's awesome. The fact that the prompt guard is so tiny, I think that's going to make a huge difference, because it's like 22 million parameters. It's like a blink of the eye. I mean, it's like you can do it so fast. So, I mean, I think the overall space is just becoming where people are realizing the seriousness of safety and security. So just having everything there, I mean, multiple layers of security, I mean, that's just good practice. So having it on the inputs, on the outputs, the overall firewall, I mean, all of that is good stuff. And then we'll see, how it goes, how it progresses. And no concern for me. I think this is where the field needs to go.
Shobha, before we move on to our next topic, any other kind of announcements that you'd highlight? I know there's a bunch announced. Those are the kind of two that stood out to me, but I know there's like, I saw the whole blog post and there's like a lot going on.
So. Yeah. The other couple things were, one was around their Meta AI app. They have consolidated all of their intelligence into one app, and that could be a ChatGPT competitor or Gemini and so on and so forth. But they want one app that people can go and do some cool things and talk to it. And they have the potential to make this super hyper-personalized, because they have billions of interactions happening across all of their WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook. You could potentially have an avatar that is really personalized to your particular needs and wants and things that you care about, right? It is a delicate balance between privacy and hyper-personalization. They'll have to do that balance really delicately, but they have a huge bet on creating the one app where you go to for all of your AI. There are a few other things that may have been like brushed off in the details, but they have done. We've had about 1.2 billion downloads of Llama models, majority of those are derivatives of Llama on Hugging Face and other places, right? So clearly the momentum around open source with the developer community is amazing. And Llama has had a huge impact on where we are today with open models versus others. But there were a few things where I was still on my wish list that we couldn't quite
they didn't get to.
There are two other models that they had announced. They're not coming quite yet. One is their small little Llama model. That'll be about an 8 billion parameter model. 8 billion was the most popular size of the Llama model from the last previous generation. We have not seen that yet, but that would be a game changer for our enterprises, especially if you have good methods of distilling it down. And on the other end of the spectrum is the behemoth model. They still need to figure out what they do with it. It's not something that's practical at this size to be run by enterprises, but we need to figure out what's the right way of distilling it down, or can I use that to train or other models and so on and so forth. There are other things around multi-agent orchestration that I was expecting Llama to release as well. Like things like MCP support and agent-to-agent protocols or anything around agent ops. As part of the whole Llama stack, I'm waiting for them to announce more things in that space as well. But overall, really positive. It's good to see that we're celebrating open source, getting closer and closer to the frontier models as well. So great LlamaCon for all of us. We had a good partnership with them. IBM and Box have done some amazing work with Llama, was announced on stage as well. So overall, very positive for all of us. The community has enjoyed it.
That's great. Yeah, and a lot more to come. I'm sure what you talked about is like going to be coming out like in the next, very soon, I think probably. Well, this is great. And speaking of open, I think I'll move us on to our next topic. We wanted to do a kind of short segment because there's been a lot of kind of interesting things bubbling up, particularly in open source in the Chinese market. And I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about that. One that we have that has actually come out is that Alibaba has launched Qwen3, which is a kind of whole class of models that they've kind of put out, which is the latest generation of their kind of Qwen generation of models. And I guess, Chris, I think I wanted to kind of start with a little bit of like a kind of like technical explainer. So in the blog post, they talk a little bit about how these models are what they call hybrid models, which combine, quote, thinking and non-thinking modes. And I think, again, in true AI form, we picked all sorts of terminology that's like very confusing. It's like, what is a hallucination anyways? And so I guess I wanted to kind of just initially start with like, what is a thinking and non-thinking mode when it comes to AI? And like, why is it kind of important for what they're doing here?
Yeah, so when we hear thinking, I will think of it as the kind of reasoning models like the 01, 03, 04s, right? So in those particular cases, if you think of what a model is, it is a kind of next token prediction model. So, you know, it's going to be token. So whenever it's answering a question. And that works great. But you can imagine some of these problems are a lot harder to solve. And therefore, if you equate the thinking time to the number of tokens that you generate, then the more tokens that you generate, the more likely you're going to get some sort of good answer, right? And so when you were saying thinking mode in that sense, it's like a human being, rather than blurting out the first thing that comes into your mind, spend a little bit of time deliberating, you know, whatever the answer is going to be before you open your mouth and announce your feelings to the world, right? And keep those thoughts inside. Keep them inside so regular human beings don't know about it. So that is kind of what the idea of thinking is there. Now, there's some class of questions where no matter how long you think about it, thinking is not going to help, right? So things like, you know, what is the capital of England, right? So if you don't know the answer, sitting thinking about it really isn't going to help you, right? So, but doing something like a math problem or a logical or reasoning problem, if there are six cats and one falls out the window, how many cats do you have left and how many lives has it got? Then it needs to think about that a little bit and then, you know, it will come to the answer and therefore you'll generate those tokens. So the idea of being able to sort of have this hybrid mode is that in reality, for some cases, you want thinking switched off, right? Quick questions, you know, general Q&A type knowledge answers. But if you're doing logic and reasoning, you want the ability to switch that on and have the model take a little bit of time to think about that and come back with the answer. So I still think this is a problem today that is going to go away in the future, right? Just like human beings, you know, we have learned when to blurt out an answer and when not to blurt out an answer. You don't say to a human being,
I mean, speak for yourself, Chris.
Well, actually, maybe not, right? But maybe I haven't learned. But I think in time, then I think that's going to relax there and we're not going to have to switch that on or off. But I do like this idea of the future of like a thinking budget. You know, you've got 5 minutes to think about it, 3 minutes to think about it. So I think this practice is going to evolve, but I think is very much a positive of the hybrid mode.
And Krish, I think one thing that's been raised before, but it might be kind of fun to kind of tackle it more directly with kind of this segment and these releases that are coming out. You know, some people have commented, like, I think Kate might have mentioned it on a previous episode, but we're really kind of starting to see like the return of Mixture of Experts. Like, it feels like that is like now very much back on the table. It's like what everybody's doing. So like what was kind of uncool again is like really back in force. And so I want to talk, I guess, a little bit about like why that's the case now that we're kind of seeing it in Quent 3 and is rumored for the DeepSeek R2 launch, which is kind of going to also potentially be coming out maybe even by the time this episode releases. It was rumored to happen potentially this week.
Yeah, I mean, whoever came up with the name of this podcast was quite prescient, right? I mean, Mixture of Experts. The term has been around for a long time. It meant something different when I was in grad school, so with these gating mechanisms and stuff. But I mean, the point of it is really, like, I mean, just like Chris was saying, like humans don't blurt stuff out. Humans also don't use their entire brain when they're thinking, right? I mean, I don't know what the stat is. Like, we only use 10% of our brain at a time, right? So same idea. I mean, you don't need to use everything. You don't need to activate everything because really there's a portion that's really the important part when you're thinking about something, computing something, whatever have you, inferring something. And so I think it's just taking advantage of that. I mean, you can use less power, less computation, less of everything if you're only activating the relevant parts. And then if you can know which parts to activate, then that's going to end up being a good thing. And then you can have kind of different sort of specializations, different sort of things that are better at particular aspects. So about cats falling out of trees, mixture of expert or an expert, and then I mean, whatever. I mean, all sorts of different experts on there. So I think that's where things are headed.
Sure, but I think the final bit that I was hoping to get your take on is, you know, what I love about the sort of DeepSeek story is how much it is kind of like messing with all of our intuitions about how competition in AI is like supposed to go down. So the first one, of course, was like, oh, okay, in the US, it was Meta doing open source versus these closed source guys. And So the introduction of DeepSeek is like, oh, well, now even Meta has competition.
Yeah.
And I think the other really interesting element that's been rumored around R2 is that they are doing the training not on NVIDIA, which I think is really intriguing and also kind of completely scrambles the idea that like, oh, everybody's going to just build on, you know, Jensen's chips and that's going to just be the way the AI works. Yeah. I think what I read in the blog post was that the rumors that R2 was trained on a server cluster of Huawei's Ascend 910B chips, which would mark a really big transition in how some of this happens kind of at the cutting edge. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, so I think over time, China is brilliant. Like the people are just absolutely stunning in these research labs, right? So they're very high concentration of talent. So they're trying to figure out ways around supply chain, like their dependence on the US supply chain for intelligence, right? So their own, they have a lot of intelligence to go build their own chips. There's a competition around not just the chip, but the whole set of things that go before and after the ecosystem around the chips as well. And China, I think, has a good shot at this. They should be able to go and look at the Huawei series of chips, and this is a really good use case on training them. If you look at what Google did with their tensor processing units, their TPUs, right? They have an unfair advantage that they have both all the AI and the chip manufacturing. So when they release their models like Gemini, which are running at like crazy volume every day, they need to make sure that they are super hyper optimized. Like the Gemini Flash model, for example, running on TPUs is a really good price point at scale, billions of these every day, right? So you'll start to see a lot of these companies start to leverage the architecture underlying, optimize that. And China understands that they will not always be able to get access to the technology from the rest of the world. So they will start to create their own supply chain top to bottom. There's a lot of investment coming from each of the countries in their own sovereign AI and trying to make sure that they can be masters of their own destiny in the AI space, right? I'm very excited about this whole David versus Goliath kind of a war, right? If you're looking at the size of the model that Quent 3 came out with, you have a good mixture of experts model where the number of active parameters are very, very low. And they're out-competing some of the best-in-class models from OpenAI and Google and Llamas, right? So you have this crazy compute intelligence per dollar that's just completely plummeting. And that unlocks an insane amount of other use cases that we could deploy this at, right? If you look at the way we within IBM are looking at, say, our Z series and stuff too, we want to bring AI closer and closer to where the transactions are happening, billions of these in with almost negligible latency. So I think the whole size of the models being smaller and out-competing is a great thing. taking this open source, and these are Apache 2.0 licenses, creating derivatives out of it and owning that intellectual property, carrying it with you, deploying it where you need to be, at the edge, on the servers, on the clouds. I think that's the future direction that they were taking. We should be very, very proud of how far the AI community has come on the open source models and the progress that we are making in this space. But I think going back to what Kush was mentioning around all the guardrails that are needed, when we see models like Qwen come out, we do not see a lot more transparency on the data that went in or any guardrails and stuff that they've put or any like the equivalent of the Llama Guards or the Granite Guardians being released from the Chinese labs at this point quite yet, right? The Qwen 3 models, they are text only at this point. They're not quite multimodal. So that kind of reduces the space of what use cases we can deploy them at. So a few things that they do need to catch up on, but there's just so much happening in this space. This competition is really, really positive for all of us.
I think there's a flip to that as well, which is I think, although they're not being particularly open on data, I think labs like DeepSeek, et cetera, maybe not so much kind of Qwen there, but Alibaba, but they are being very open with their code bases, right? So they open source their distributed file system, et cetera. So I think one of the things that I really appreciate in this space with the competition is that the innovation is moving out into the open source community. And I think because these labs are being constrained, it is forcing them to think in a different way. So I actually really hope that some crazy kid in a garage somewhere is just going to turn up one day and go, I've trained a 50 billion trillion parameter model and I've done it with a cheeseburger and, you know, and I just took this chip out my microwave and it was fine. Do you know what I mean? And we'll be like, whoa! And then what do we do with all of those chips at that point? And I think there's a really serious problem there is like when the next innovation comes, right? And it will come at some point where we realize we don't need all of these GPUs. Well, what are we going to do with all of these GPUs and these massive data centers? And again, if NVIDIA wants to donate some to me, I will happily take them and I will find something to do with them.
You hear that, Jensen, if you're listening.
we always talk about China and US, right? I'm not sure if you guys noticed, there was a new model that came out in the last few days for voice, speech to text. There's a company, a small lab, they're two Korean undergrads who put this model together called DIA, DIA. DIA does speech to text with very high accuracy. It understands accents, background noises. It does a really, really good job. And it's outcompeting the bigger labs like 11 Labs or even OpenAI's voices and stuff like that. Super small, Apache 2.0, open sourced it. So you're seeing innovation from all over the world. This is not just a US versus China. And at times you hear Mistral from France, right? But this is a global moment right now. Everybody is investing heavily. In India, you have a lot of labs that are now getting a lot of investment to go build these models and own your own destiny. So just the fact that the whole community, the global community is all in on open source and powering through it, that's the way we should be.
And Shobha, just to add to that, Sir Demis Hassabis, I mean, please note the word sir. I don't hear no American accent on him, buddy.
That's actually a great pivot into our next segment. One thing I did really want to cover was this pretty interesting letter that came out of JP Morgan. Patrick Opet, who is their chief information security officer, penned sort of an open letter to the industry that was kind of a call to action to work on SaaS security, which is a big problem and a known problem. But I thought what was pretty interesting is that he focused specifically on AI and its contribution to this issue. So I'll just quote what he said. He said, critically, the explosive growth of new value-bearing services in data management, automation, artificial intelligence, and AI agents amplifies and rapidly distributes these risks, bringing them directly to the forefront of every organization. And so kind of there's a SaaS security issue, and then AI is going to basically like pour gasoline on it. And I guess, Krish, maybe I'll throw it to you, is like, this seems pretty dire. Are we in trouble?
I don't know if there's anything new that is being said in this letter, really. I mean, yes, agents, of course. we've had agents, really, I mean, for decades in some ways, if you think about it. I mean, the autonomy, the the action taking is not particularly new. I mean, with AI agents these days, it's the interaction through natural language, more data and this sort of stuff. But I mean, there's been things. I mean, Shobhit mentioned the Z processors and stuff. I mean, transactions happen, things happen very quickly. There's been, I mean, software as a service for more than a decade. I mean, the point of the letter is, yes, I mean, focus on security, of course. I mean, who's not going to say yes? Maybe there's a culture sort of issue that's being pointed out that maybe we need to think more about these important consequential industries, regulated industries and stuff at the forefront. Maybe, like you said, Tim, I mean, the mixture of experts, we don't cover that industry so much. Maybe we should, and other sort of industries like this. But yeah, I mean, like for people who do work in those industries, this is not like anything new, really.
So this is a good reminder for everybody. That like you have to think about the governance as we move from experiments to going into production at scale. And I'll give you my take on a more of a, from an enterprise perspective, right? When I'm working with my clients and we're putting things into production, across all of these different SaaS vendors, everybody else is in this rush to force agents into their SaaS platforms, right? The like even industry standards like MCP, it took them a while, different versions to get to supporting authentication properly, right? There's just so much in software engineering that has been done to secure things the right way. And we're almost like throwing that away and starting from scratch when we get into these agents and stuff, right? We have collectively decided as humanity that English is the way to talk to these agents. And it just does not scale quite yet, right? If I'm trying to call another agent and give it a task, I need more structure because I need to do error catching. I need to be able to pass authentication. For this particular task, I'm giving you read access to this particular data set and whatnot, right? So we need to evolve beyond the cute demos that we have all done on stage last year. And this year, as you get more and more, more serious about rolling these out at scale, the governance aspects of it, you have 10 different SaaS vendors for the marketing team that you're working with, right? The CMO is not spending that much time understanding what's happening with all of that data. Is everything, if I have to go put a small policy, and this policy could be as simple as, I don't want generative AI to create any content that refers to these 10 competitors. If I give it that small a task, such a basic thing to do, it's insane how much effort it will take for all these enterprises to go make that happen in every 10, 20, 30 different SaaS vendors that they're working with. So we are struggling as when we're delivering these with enterprises. That's why all the work that Cushion team are doing around governance, around security, guardrails, things of that nature are so important. And this has to work across regardless of which AI model that you're bringing into the organization. So I think JPMorgan Chase is doing a really good job at giving a reality check to leadership. And what JPMorgan does is often imitated and copied, and people get inspired by the work that they've done in the space. We need more people to talk about governance and the reason why we need smaller models that you can monitor. You have the right guardrails, even speech models. As you start to move from just text-based LLMs to now speech-to-speech native, I'm trying to roll something out at one of our regulated industry clients. And it's very tricky. The speech models, tracing, looking at auditability, the agent ops that's needed for speech models and stuff is insanely difficult. There's a lot that this community is going to do. I would say if 2025 we say is the year of the agents, I would argue that 2025 is the year of governance. We got to get this right if we have a shot at going at production at scale.
Or we could build more agents to solve the problem. Not, you know, I get your point. We should go governance, and I believe that's a serious thing, and we should build walls and put everything behind walls, and then nobody can access anything. or we could go, let's build more agents, and then the good agents can fight the bad agents. Yeah. And then we're going to be fine because we're going to have a little good agent versus bad agent war. So I think any problem that is super hard today, we don't need to solve that with things like governance. We can solve that with more AI. That is my solution to this.
So Cisco, we recently had the big security conference this week. Cisco released a foundation model for security. IBM has done a lot in this space around security-related models, right? So if you're looking at cybersecurity risks, you're looking at hallucinations, things of that nature. So I think there'll be enough AI improvements that we're doing, you need AI, good AI to fight bad AI, 100% with you on that. We do need to talk about the discipline that enterprises need to have to ensure that those good AI agents are deployed as default, baked in security by design, not as an afterthought bolted on, right? That's the point that I think JP Morgan Chase is arguing, that get excited about this, huge, huge benefit to us, but you have to make sure that this is secure by design from the very beginning.
But you can't cripple innovation at the same time. No, I get it, right? There's certain areas where you have to say, you know what, this is a very serious thing and I need it to not hallucinate, blah, 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 blah. But then at the same time, you need to make breakthroughs and you need to discover new things and we have a hype cycle to maintain, right? So at the same time, we can't kind of hold back on that. So I get it. And I think for certain regulated industries, I understand that and that makes sense. But at the same time, sometimes hallucinations are a good thing, right? Because it gives you a bit of creativity. So we just need to be appropriate for the right scenario, okay?
Chris's point is actually a good one. When you have a mix of things that are controlling others, it doesn't always have to be just in a closed sort of system, like with a single governor sort of thing, right? I mean, our immune system, like it controls diseases and stuff, right? I mean, there's bad things happening. There's good guys fighting against it. It happens in nature all the time in different ecosystems. So if you take the big system level view of things, control is not always just like one little knob and stuff. So I think it's actually a mix of things. And I just wanted to end with a shout out to the robust intelligence folks. So that's the team that put together the Cisco model that Chopin mentioned. So really good work from them.
Great. Well, that's resolved the Shobit Chris debate conclusively.
I thought my cousin would be on my side.
I'm on both sides.
More
security,
right.
The better.
Yeah, exactly. Chris likes both of you equally. It's fine. So I think to close our episode, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is the first anniversary episode of MOE, very fast year. We were able to bring together the original cast from episode one. And so a little bit like the kind of kickoff question we did, I thought it'd be fun to end with just like a final segment, just talking about like what we did on that first episode, because it's very fun to take a look back and be like, oh yeah, like whatever happened to that? Or like, oh, that turned out to be a really big thing. So it's kind of just like a fun exercise. Producer Hans here will be playing some clips so you'll actually be able to hear yourself from a year ago, which may either be fun or cringeworthy. We're about to find out. But I think the first topic that we covered on episode one was the Rabbit R1 device, which if you recall, was a small, cute little hardware device with AI embedded. And it was a conversation about AI hardware and where it was going to go. Hans, do you want to roll that tape so we can have the respective takes of everybody on the show about what they said about that?
But it's like trying to sell a pager to somebody today. It's like, here's this thing that's got the things you need. You can get messages and, you know, but nobody has a pager, right? Because it was replaced by the phone. And so I do think there will be AI on hardware devices. I just don't get that one.
Just being an optimistic of where the tech is going, I'm more on the Washne vibe of I see the promise of what this can bring. But I think that these devices will evolve. And Apple takes a while to come into this industry, right? Same thing goes with the Vision Pro glasses, right? I was a big fan of them when I bought them early on, and 30 days in, I did return them.
To me, what this is leading to is actually like a fourth paradigm of how we interact with computing, right? I mean, there was punch cards, there was command line, then there was GUIs, and this is now, I mean, like we're in this fourth sort of era of the language, natural language interactions and so forth. And I think, maybe there's no killer app yet, but the killer app maybe is the fact that we have this new way of interacting. And that's what these devices are going to start us on the road down.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, Shobit, I'll start with you because I think you actually bought a Rabbit R1.
Yep.
Where is it? Where is it now?
It's in the garage in a box.
Okay.
I can't even sell it on eBay, man.
Oh, really? Can't even? There's no secondary market for the R1.
Oh, man. I'm hoping that this will be one of those things that goes for $1 million later. But yes, it's in a garage in a box. I couldn't even find it to bring this for this episode. But I think overall, I still stand by what I said. I think the market needs to evolve and we're not there yet. we've not seen a single device that is beyond, like even Ray-Bans. I obviously have the Ray-Ban glasses as well. But it's okay, but not at the point where you can really use it as a real device. I think the last time we saw an accessory that could augment your iPhones and stuff was the watch, right? Watches, they looked at a niche, they went after that, and they're augmenting and extending your phone. They don't work without the phone, right? It just works really, really well as a partner. So I think we'll get to that point with devices, but I've not seen another thing to throw my money at yet.
All right, real quick, Chris, do you want to take a victory lap on this one? Because I think you won this point.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling good about that one. That thing is a pager. I said it at the time and I'll say it again. So I'm feeling good.
All right, sounds good. Second thing that we covered on episode one was the rise of a mysterious chatbot on Chatbot Arena called GPT-2 Chatbot, which if you recall, there was wild speculation about what it was. And I guess, Hans, do you want to play the clip about like your all's take at the time?
Is it GPT-5? I don't know. I think they've hyped GPT-5 so much that if that is...
at this point, it has to be AGI or it's like not even going to impress us.
So. Exactly. So maybe it's GPT-4-5, but I don't think I read a theory online. I can't say who said it, but I actually like it. Somebody said that take the GPT to LLM, which they've open sourced. You can download that in Hugging Face. And they reckon that they may have trained GPT-2 on the latest data that trains GPT-4. And I think that's an interesting theory, right? You know, GPT-2 with GPT-4 data. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know. But I don't think it's GPT-5. It probably is GPT-4 or 5, and as you say, you've got to put it in some sort of arena to see how well it's actually performing.
Chris, that was a pretty good guess. I mean, because we're now living in a GPT 4.5 world, right?
Yeah, I think I can't even remember what that model was. Was that like the when was this? Was that the 4.0 or was it?
Yeah, yeah. So that was 4.0. The next model that GPT released, and I think one of the somebody had spilled the beans saying that hey, yes, it scored really high during the GPT 4.0 release. So our guesstimate is that was the testing they were doing on LLM Caesarina.
Yeah, I can't even remember. That's how far back it was. But I think my guess was pretty good, right? It wasn't quite 4 or 5, but it was basically the next version of the model. Yeah, I feel good. You know, I still think the GPT-2 theory was a great one, though. So, you know, so somebody's got to do that, actually.
It's a good idea. All right, and so for the final one that I want to play, we talked about agents, which has since become basically like an ongoing MOE in joke, I suppose. I think with Shobha and Chris on the show, both of you are probably our most prolific users of the word agent. I feel if we just did a word count of all the things you've said on MOE, probably you two would be at the top of that leaderboard. So Kush, I'm going to ask you to maybe make a guess, which is which one of these guys used agent first on MOE? Who was number one on breaking that seal, I guess?
Yeah, this time I'll go with the family member.
Woo! Okay. The Washington clan!
All right, well, roll the tape, Hans.
The talk by Andrew on how agentic flows are going to be the way we get to AGI.
Yes,
congratulations. So, yes.
I didn't hear the word agents. I heard agentic. Yeah. I didn't agentic, hear the word. Yeah. I didn't hear the word agents at all. I call this is a fix.
Yeah, disqualified. So we'll do some investigation on who actually used the word agent first. But I guess Shobha, you can you can rest easy knowing that you were really a pathblazer there for us.
But if you should take that a second to acknowledge how far we have come in the last year. At that point, Andrew had just introduced how a 3.5 can GPT 3.5 with tools can actually outcompete GPT-4 and stuff, right? So just imagine how far we have come in terms of the cost, the kind of tools, the ecosystem around agents. I'm just very proud of where the community is today with what's happening in the multi-agent space.
Yeah, for sure. And more to come soon. I mean, I think we're going to have to do this next year as well, where we look back on what we were talking about for in 2025.
Ooh, we should have done, what should be the next word that'll catch, that'll go viral, right?
Yeah, exactly. You may have used it on this episode. Open letter, you know?
Congratulations to the production crew for the 1 year anniversary. I want to give a big shout out to the producer Hans, Alex, Michael, and Selma. You guys have poured your soul into this. Thank you so much for bringing the mixture of experts to our audiences. Thank you so much.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Kush, Shobit, Chris, an amazing panel. Glad to have you on again. And thanks to joining us, all you listeners. If you enjoyed what you heard, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and podcast platforms everywhere. And we will see you all next week on Mixture of Experts.